Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Prior to July 1995, Zeta Talk stated that weather predictions would be inaccurate based upon the wrong parameters. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "All attempts to explain the changes based on global warming from the greenhouse effect will run into snags as the weather will refuse to be predictable. The reason lies deep within the Earth core, an area the meteorologists refuse to consider. And thus their predictions on the atmosphere will never be based on the right parameters." End of the quote. On January 27, 2000, a new supercomputer was failing in just this manner, and I quote from the Times, "It sounded phenomenal a week ago as American meteorologists unveiled a supercomputer capable of 2,500 billion calculations a second that would give them warnings of impending weather problems up to 10 days in advance. The new IBM supercomputer, running an array of programs said to be the world's best for weather forecasting, had digested reams of data from balloons, satellites, ships, and ocean buoys. The National Weather Service announced a 40% chance of light snow accumulation, less than 1 inch. As the paralyzed east coast of the United States dug out from South Carolina to Massachusetts, there was much hand-wringing among weather forecasters over their misreading of the size, intensity, and course of the storm." End of the quote from the Times. Zeta Talk on weather predictions increasingly failing, made 5 years earlier, coming true. Prior to July 1995, Zeta Talk also stated that weather changes were heralding the approach of Planet X. And I quote from Zeta Talk again, "Violent storms, unusual weather patterns, severe and long-lasting droughts, increased frequency of hurricanes, torrential rains, and a general warming of the planet." End of the quote. On December 14, 1999, the Associated Press reported that weather changes were occurring at an increasing rate, and this trend continued. And I quote from Discover Magazine, June 2000, "In 1999, the number of catastrophes worldwide, including mudslides in Venezuela, a severe hailstorm in Sydney, avalanches in the Alps, Denmark's worst winter in a century, floods in Latin America and Southeast Asia, Cyclone Bart in Japan and Cyclone 5B in India hit 755, surpassing the record of 702 set only the year before." End of the quote from Discover Magazine. It should be noted that Zeta Talk and Zeta Talk alone predicted these weather changes in 1995, which are still emerging and coming true according to the 1995 prediction. Without question, Zeta's right again. On the January 12, 2000 Sightings radio show, Zeta Talk predicted live in the predictions for 2000 that cold summers, even snow in the summer, would be experienced as part of the increasing weather irregularities. And I quote from Zeta Talk during 2000, written that day, "And likewise, there will increasingly be very cold summers. This is a new angle, very cold summers. This has been relayed in the past in ancient reports of what the Chinese called a world cycle, meaning the approach of another pole shift where snow fell in summer. This type of weather change, which will shock the weathermen who are trying to explain events in terms of global warming, will begin." End of the quote. Reports started coming in of snow in summer on the equator. And I quote from Anna Nova, July 25, 2001. "Snow traps thousands in Saudi Arabia. Thousands of people ended up trapped in a national park in Saudi Arabia after it started snowing. Rescue workers were called after 75 people were injured in the panic. Several hundred were rescued using helicopters and mountain jeeps. several inches of snow fell in the mountain area in the southwest of the country, while other regions baked in 100-degree Fahrenheit temperatures. End of the quote. And a first for Somalia in this regard. And I quote from SomaliaNet, June 1, 2005. Snowfall in Somalia reported. The first snowfall in this part of the world has claimed one life and caused extensive damage to properties. Puntland, northeastern part of Somalia, has never recorded snowfall before. The storm left a blanket of snow on the ground, something residents had never seen in their lives before. End of the quote. Who else predicted this in 2000, 5 years before the occurrence? No one but the Zetas. Hey, Zetas right again. In September 1999, Zeta Talk stated in their predictions that hurricanes would be no more fierce than previously, but would occur in atypical places, and I quote, "Hurricanes will be no more fierce than they are today, but will occur in places not used to hurricane-force winds, not just Japan and the east coast of the U.S. and Bangladesh, but other places, places that do not expect hurricanes blasting inland." End of the quote. By July 20, 2001, this was the report, despite an increase in frequency, and with 2004 being a record year and 2005 topping that, nothing stronger than a Category 5, this is holding true. And I quote from Reuters, July 20, 2001, "The highest level of North American hurricane activity ever measured was recorded from 1995 to 2000. According to the previous quarter century, there were twice as many hurricanes, including 2.5 times more major hurricanes, and more than 5 times as many hurricanes impacting the Caribbean islands." End of the quote. But these storms are landing in atypical places. And I quote from Free Press International, "On March 25, 2004, something very odd happened. For the first time in recorded history, a hurricane, or something similar to a hurricane, hit Brazil, the first hurricane on record in the South Atlantic. The U.S. National Hurricane Center in Miami estimated the storm was a full-fledged Category 1 hurricane with central winds of 75 to 80 miles per hour, some gusts reportedly at 95 miles per hour." End of the quote. Who else predicted that hurricanes would start hitting in atypical places? None but the Zetas. Zetas right again. In May 1995, Zeta Talk stated that crop failure would occur due to erratic weather giving the wrong signal to plants, where they would think spring had come early, causing worldwide crop failures. And I quote from Zeta Talk, crop failures, "The weather will become unpredictable with torrential rainstorms were not expected, and droughts likewise were not expected. Extremes of temperature will be experienced. Unusual warm winters where the trees and shrubs will start to bud thinking spring and then be subjected to frost. Similarly, frosts will come late in the spring, almost into summer, killing the buds which had already put forth their tender shoots. All parts of the world will experience extremes. Of course, not all produce will fail. Greenhouse crops will come through. Backyard gardens tended carefully by watchful eyes will survive, but the large cash crops that supply crowded population centers will find little to market and the prices will go up accordingly. At first, stores put up against such times will be tapped. After a bit, these stores will run down and governments will get nervous. Helping handouts from countries better off to those in desperation will stop." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Starting in January 1998, reports of such crop failures began coming in, but as the shortage topic on the Trouble Times website shows, this increased exponentially in the year 2000. And I quote from that topic, "Suddenly there were shortage reports from Afghanistan, Albania, Algeria, Argentina, Armenia, Austria, Australia, Bolivia, Brazil, Bulgaria, Burundi, Cambodia, Canada, China, Croatia, Cuba, Cyprus, Ethiopia, France, Georgia, Ghana, Greece, Guyana, Honduras, India, Iran, Iraq, Israel, Italy, Jamaica, Jordan, Kazakhstan, Kenya, Korea, Laos, Liberia, Madagascar, Mexico, Moldova, Mongolia, Morocco, Mozambique, Nepal, Pakistan, Palestine, Paraguay, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Romania, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Serbia, Slovakia, South Africa, Sudan, Syria, Tajikistan, Tanzania, Thailand, Uganda, Ukraine, United Kingdom, Uruguay, Uzbekistan, Vietnam, and Yugoslavia. End of the quote. What was that the Zeta said in 1995, that there would be worldwide crop shortages? Hey, Zeta's right again. By late 2002, a UN report documented the extent as worldwide, devastating, and due to weather-related problems. And I quote from the New Zealand Herald, October 28, 2002. Global warming is helping to cause an unprecedented series of famines that is pushing the world beyond its ability to cope. The warning, the starkest yet issued by the UN on how climate change is affecting world food supplies. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization is predicting that this year's total world harvest will fall for the fifth year in succession, while the global population continues to grow. Food stocks are falling well below critical levels, and prices are soaring. Although emergency food aid almost tripled over the 1990s, it was not enough to meet growing needs. This year, they had to suspend help to 3 million women, children, and elderly people in North Korea because it had run out of resources. End of the quote. What was it that the Zeta said in 1995, that helping hands would be withdrawn as food stores would be running out? By 2002, this was exactly the UN report. Hey, Zeta's right again. In early 1995, Zeta Talk stated that warming from the Earth's core was in process, ascribed wrongly to global warming of the air as the heat was coming from the core. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "All attempts to explain the changes based on global warming from the greenhouse effect will run into snags. The reason lies deep within the Earth's core, an area the meteorologists refuse to consider, and thus their predictions on the atmosphere will never be based on the right parameters." End of the quote. By April 2002, there was a report that heating of the continental rocks had accelerated. And I quote from Space Daily, written April 21, 2002. A report in the April 15th issue of Global Research Letters states that continental rock has warmed in recent centuries. The scientists based their analysis on temperature readings taken by lowering sensitive thermometers into holes drilled from Earth's surface into rock formations on six continents: Africa, Asia, Europe, North America, South America, and Australia. The research calculations, based on data from 616 boreholes, found evidence of an increase in the heat content of the continents over the past 500 years. With more than half of that heat gained occurring during the 20th century, and nearly one-third of it since 1950. End of the quote from Space Daily. In other words, heating from the bottom up, which is why the permafrost is also melting. Hey, Zeta's right again. On January 15, 1998, Zeta Talk stated that illness will increase as Planet X approaches. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Take Sick, written February 15, 1998. Increasingly, as the pole shift nears, the populace will take sick. This will take the form of known illnesses occurring more frequently, seemingly depressed immune systems, but will also appear as new and puzzling illness not seen before in the memory of man. What's going on here? The change at the core of the Earth that has resulted in El Nino weather patterns and white buffalo and deformed frogs will also affect man. The germs are on the move. Their carriers are on the move. And thus humans are exposed to diseases that are so rare as to be undocumented in medical journals. You will see increasing illness, odd illness, Microbes that travel because an insect is scattering about and spreading germs in places where it normally doesn't travel. 90% of all the illness and distress you're going to see is a natural situation, a natural occurrence. Because of the changing, swirling in the core of the earth, and this will continue to uptick until the pole shift. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Take Sick. And the Zetas reiterated in 1999, and I quote from Zeta Talk, September 15, 1999. Illness will slightly increase from where it is today. There is a lot of illness now because people who are already unstable are unable to take the turmoil caused by the increased emanations from the earth. Some of them have simply sensed what is coming and have decided to die. This is true of animals as well as humans. Sickness will increase, but not to the point where it's going to get exponentially worse. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. On February 2, 2000, a Washington report confirmed this increase, and published concerns were subsequently reported. And I quote from Reuters, "Diseases from around the world threatening the U.S. 30 new diseases make global debut. At least 30 previously unknown diseases have appeared globally since 1973, including HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C, Ebola, hemorrhagic fever, and the encephalitis-related Nipah virus that emerged in Indonesia. 20 well-known infectious diseases such as tuberculosis, malaria, and cholera have reemerged or spread since 1973. End of the quote. And another quote from Scientific America, dated August 2000. Notably, computer models predict that global warming and other climate alterations it induces will expand the incidence and distribution of many serious medical disorders. Disturbingly, these forecasts seem to be coming true." End of the quote from Scientific American. And since this time, SARS and the increased incidence of flesh-eating disease, entire cruise ships regularly returning to port with hundreds of passengers ill with stomach flu, have been reported. Depressed immune systems? Who gave you that inside track years before it appeared? Hey, Zeta's right again. Prior to July 1995, Zeta Talk stated that the Earth's magnetic field was appearing to weaken as it was diffused and confused by the approach of Planet X. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Magnetic Field, written on that date. "The Earth's magnetic field is not weakening. It is changing course or direction, and thus scatter does not register on instruments in the same old way. This is an early indication of the great confusion that Planet X will have on the Earth soon during the pole shift. Another way to describe this dispersing is the scientific term, base resonant frequency. This is just another name for magnetic pull, the strength of the pull the Earth's core has on instruments through electricity coursing through wires, creates a magnetic field in a core of iron or some other highly susceptible material. The resulting electromagnetic field can be either aligned with the Earth or set to cross the Earth's magnetic field, or at any partial angle that the scientist desires. Depending on the strength of the Earth's own magnetic field, the field created by the instruments is thus disrupted or weakened. This weakening disruption, noted by scientists, is just another indication of the dispersal of the Earth's internal magnetic field." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. On March 14, 1999, a NASA expert confirmed that. And I quote from Answers from NASA. Question, is the Earth magnetic field weakening heading to 0 point? On a scale from 1 to 10, with 1 being the weakest and 10 the strongest, 2,000 years ago it was a 10, and today it is a 1. Is it heading for a 0 point when a pole shift will occur? Answer, is the Earth's field getting weaker? Perhaps 1,200 years from now, the line goes through zero. End of the quote. And since this time, increasing reports of compass malfunction and magnetic drift, far beyond the pace speculated by NASA, taking 1,200 years. And I quote from spaceweather.com, May 31st, 2005. The May 30th storm began when, for no obvious reason, the interplanetary magnetic field near Earth tipped south. End of the quote. And another from Edmonton Journal, dated June 11th, 2005. For centuries, the magnetic North Pole was ours, a constant companion that wandered the rolling tundra and frozen seas of our Arctic. But no more. A Canadian scientist who recently returned from a trip to measure the pole's current location says it has now left Canadian territory and crossed into international waters. End of the quote. And another quote from Sunday Times, July 18, 2004, South Africa. Satellites in low Earth orbit over southern Africa are already showing signs of radiation damage suffered as a result of Earth's magnetic field weakening. The decay in the Earth's magnetic field was becoming increasingly apparent in the South Atlantic Anomaly, a huge deviation in the Earth's magnetic field discovered with the help of the Hermanus Magnetic Observatory. This month, the European Space Agency approved a multi-million euro space mission called Swarm to measure this anomaly, which stretches from southern Africa towards South America. The observatory has also recorded a fast-growing deviation between true north and magnetic north over southern Africa during the past 10 years, drifting steadily westward. Taken together, the blip and this drift point to an imminent reversal in the Earth's north-south magnetic alignment. End of the quote from South Africa. So were the Zetas correct that Planet X and not a 1,200-year degradation were the cause of the magnetic drift? A prediction they made in 1995? Hey, what can I say? Zetas right again. On May 4, 2002, the Zetas predicted increasing aircraft problems with microbursts as well as magnetic instruments and GPS guidance systems going awry. And I quote from Zeta Talk, 2002 Quickening, atmospheric disturbances beyond those usually encountered and thus watched for by pilots are occurring. What is called microbursts were increasingly reported and downed planes blamed for this. If the weather is moving to extremes, this equates to hotter air masses, colder drafts, and sudden wind equalizing these air masses. Beyond these problems, airplanes use satellites to guide them, magnetic orientation to guide them, and these likewise will either fail on occasion or give invalid readings. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. By October 2004, a blitz of small plane crashes for unknown reasons was occurring. 13 occurred within a week in late October 2004, when the national average worldwide is less than one per day. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Small Plane Crashes, written October 25, 2004. What would occur if a small plane were informed by GPS that their location was not amidst hills, but in the open? Beyond confused guidance systems, small planes lack the ability to recover from electromagnetic surges. End of the quote. And by August 24, 2005, a record number of large airplanes were going down suddenly, either due to bad weather or unexplained decompression at high altitudes. And I quote from AP News, written August 24, 2005. Plane crash in Peru kills 41. A Peruvian airliner split in two after an emergency landing during a fierce storm, killing at least 41 people. It was the world's fifth major airline accident this month. Last week, 152 people died when a Colombian-registered West Caribbean charter went down in Venezuela. 2 days earlier, 121 people died when a Cyprus-registered Helios Airways Boeing plunged into the mountains north of Athens. 16 people were believed to have died August 6th when a plane operated by Tunisia's Tuninter crashed off Sicily. In Toronto, all 309 people survived aboard an Air France Airbus A340 that overshot the runway on August 2nd. End of the quote. Hey, what can I say? Zeta's right again. On June 15, 1996, Zeta Talk stated that booms would become common and occur even inland as Planet X approached. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Booms," written June 15, 1996. "Increasingly as the pole shift nears, the Earth will give evidence of the compression and tension in her surface by what humans will perceive to be sonic booms. The mechanism is in fact the same, clapping air masses, the same mechanism that produces thunder. Where thunder is caused by air masses separated by what is essentially a vacuum, created by the superheated lightning bolt, and where sonic booms are caused by a compressed air mass pushed in front of the plane, exploding back to equalize with the thin air mass trailing the plane, pre-cataclysm booms are caused by heaving in large bodies of water. Earthquakes where plates are compressed are measured by humans as the friction causes jolting. But for every compression adjustment, there is somewhere a widening in a rift. Most often these rifts lie underwater as water fills low-lying areas. A widening rift does not jolt the bordering plates. It is a silent adjustment. However, the seawater rushing to fill the new void has an effect on the air masses above, creating a thin air mass and causing the air on all sides of this thin airspace to rush in and clap." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. By March 15, 1999, 3 years later, these mystery booms were being reported. And I quote from Paranormal About. "In January 1999, a large boom disturbed the residents of Colorado Springs and Denver. Some witnesses said the noise was accompanied by a flash of light in the sky. There was no electrical storm. Although it could have been a sonic boom, the military denied any military activity in the area. On January 10, 1999, dozens of people in Fairfield, Ohio, reported a stunning explosive sound. No cause was ever discovered. Thousands of homes were rattled by two huge mysterious booms 30 miles southeast of Los Angeles just before 10 p.m. on May of 1998. Residents described the sounds as explosions, earthquake noises, and thuds. The two booms occurred about 5 minutes apart. Two very loud skyquakes startled hundreds of people on the beaches of Ocean City, Maryland, on June 30, 1998. No planes were in sight, and the sounds seemed to be coming from some miles offshore. A mysterious boom reverberated through Narragansett Bay, Rhode Island, on August 1, 1998. Investigating officials could not find the source of the noise. On September 16, 1997, the campus of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was rocked by a boom that shook the ground. Readings from ground monitoring equipment showed that the energy did not come from the air, ruling out a sonic boom. On December 17, 1997, a huge aerial blast rattled windows and blew open storm doors in Rogersville, Missouri, a town 13 miles east of Springfield. Again, the Air Force denied the possibility of a sonic boom caused by one of its aircraft. End of the quote from the Paranormal About website. A. Did booms increase after 1996? Sure seems so. What can I say? Zeta's right again. In June 1997, Zeta Talk stated that green meteors and other trash will begin arriving with increasing frequency, but this will not be explained by the authorities. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Space Trash," written October 15, 1998. "Why does this trash precede the traveling planet itself? Something similar to a swimmer's paddling foot in water. Something may be bobbling up and down on top of the foot or on the bottom of the foot, but it may never leave and go entirely around the foot, but just bobble back and forth. Thus, meteor and space trash activity will increase going into the passage, far ahead of the actual passage itself. There will be increasing activity of this nature, larger meteors, more than just dramatic fireballs or green streaks. The recent occurrence of a large rock falling into Greenland is not going to be unusual. There will be many more dramatic shows, but at the same time, less talk of it in the media. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Fireballs screaming across the sky and meteors outside of scheduled meteor showers began. The record during 2004, as an example, is astonishing. And I quote from the Signs of the Times. March 28, 2004. A brilliant fireball streaked across the central Saskatchewan sky Sunday night, providing a colorful spectacle and rattling windows and walls with its pressure wave. There are witness reports as far south as North Dakota and north as L'Allange, as east as Winnipeg and west to Edmonton. May 2, 2004. Residents across Perth, Australia, have reported seeing a huge meteor across the northwest skies overnight. Some reported seeing a huge glow once the object hit the horizon. It looked like a giant fireball, this really bright meteor coming down, probably about 30-degree angle headed across the northwest. Then it disappeared behind some houses and there was a really bright flash. June 7, 2004. I just caught a fireball coming from the skies some days ago. They are falling more and more frequently than ever before here in Poland. June 13, 2004. We had another fireball in the sky here this evening in Arizona. This was red and streaking across the sky, low on the horizon. This will not make the news any more than the other two made the news. I am not sure about the one seen in the southern part of the state last week, which was also seen here. That makes four. June 14, 2004. I was driving due north from Detroit and saw two huge objects streak across the sky to the northeast. I've seen plenty of meteors in my lifetime, but nothing close to the size of these objects, and the trail they left was amazing. July 15, 2004. A red fireball moving swiftly through the night sky, spewing sparks and leaving a trail of vapor before turning white as it entered the atmosphere. Finnish News reported. August 3, 2004. A huge fireball lit up the night sky over Cardiff in Wales, UK. Witnesses say the impact lit the sky up and a huge explosion shook all the houses in the area. Despite an obvious large presence of the local authorities who cordoned off the area, subsequent inquiries to the police and the fire brigade have been met with denial of any event that night. Police claim there is no record on their computer of anything happening that night. October 5, 2004. As I drove to walk my dog along the Columbia River, heading east in the direction of Mount Hood here in Washington State, I could clearly see a lighted object on the horizon which was large and unlike anything I had ever seen before. End of the quotes from the Signs of the Time. Does this sound like increased activity? Does this sound like the authorities are denying this and keeping it out of the media? Yep, Zeta's right again. Though unexplained in human terms, the methane gas explanation for Tunguska given by the Zetas exactly fits. In February 1996, Zeta Talk stated that Tunguska was due to methane released during an earthquake. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Tunguska explosion, written February 15, 1996. A source of endless speculation is the wide area of flattened trees spread outward in a circle, the result of an apparent explosion that occurred just after the turn of the century in Siberia. No witnesses, radioactivity, or meteor remains seem to exist as pieces toward solving this puzzle. Nuclear power was not yet in mankind's hands. But what occurred? The Tunguska trees were devastated by an explosion that occurred close to the ground, as evidenced by the butterfly pattern of trees knocked sideways. It was a huge cloud of well-mixed methane and air, equivalent to all the natural gas being piped around in the U.S. at any given time. Methane gas occurs naturally, a result of the decompression of organic materials. Landfills must vent this or experience explosions. Some humans know they can light and briefly burn their farts. Humus, or accidentally buried organic material, is a source of methane gas, and if not vented, will pool if trapped. Siberia was once lush. Where Siberia may appear to be a frozen wasteland, decomposition of trapped matter, proceeding slowly but over a long time, can accumulate a large trapped pool of methane gas. Released due to a shift in the Earth's crust, this would explode. The process was 1. Methane gas hisses out from under frozen permafrost that had been cracked like a sheet of glass due to earth stress, pre-shock to the earthquake that was recorded during the Tunguska explosion. 2. Methane gas mixes with the air as it rises, followed by more hissing air, so that a huge cloud of methane has formed in the atmosphere over Tunguska. 3. A wick of methane that has drifted upward and southeast, driven by the prevailing westerlies, is sparked due to the air movement, the same process that causes lightning due to rapid air movement during storms. 4. The lit methane burns rapidly back along the wick, the meteor that was seen, lights all the gas that is encountered, but before all the nearest witnesses can see it, an explosive situation occurs. The explanation that a meteor exploded above ground is an attempt by the establishment to avoid the methane gas and thus the pole shift and shifting crust issue. Comets and meteors do not explode when encountering Earth's atmosphere. This is not what your history or science presents to you. If they are monstrous, they plunge to Earth and leave a crater, such as the Gulf of Mexico off Yucatan. If they are tiny, they burn up in the atmosphere as shooting stars. If they are mid-size, they burn on their periphery, but land to be rocks picked up and examined by your scientists. Meteors leave traces. Methane does not. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. On July 21, 2001, some 5 years later, the Times of London reported that German and Russian scientists had concluded a gas explosion for Tunguska. And I quote from the Times, July 21, 2001, "Siberia blast was volcanic blowout. For the past half century, the Tunguska event has been explained as an incoming meteorite or comet exploding in the upper atmosphere with the force of 1,000 Hiroshima bombs. However, it left no cosmic debris or crater, forcing even experts to admit that its cause was one of the great mysteries of modern science. 17 factors, including the pattern of tectonic faults and fallen trees in the area, suggest that the explosion had nothing to do with outer space, but was caused by gas forced upwards." Wolfgang Kundt, professor of astrophysics at the University of Bonn, writes in August issue of the journal Current Science, "Two costly expeditions by the University of Bologna since the Soviet collapse have focused on meteorites. They claim to have found microscopic traces of space dust in spruce resin to support the view that the blast was caused by a stony meteor 200 feet wide approaching at a 45 degree angle and exploding 4 miles above the Earth. However, such a meteorite cannot account for 12 conical holes in the ground near the epicenter and would have felled the trees in a parallel pattern," Professor Kundt insists. Andrei Okhovatov, a Russian scientist who supports many of his findings, says that a meteor 200 feet across would have left at least 100,000 tons of debris along its approach path. But where are the remnants? Nowhere. Nothing after decades of detailed research. End of the quote from the Times. So were the Zetas right in 1996 when they said it was methane gas? 5 years before the scientific proof emerged? Indeed, Zetas right again. But you know, the meteor theory is still floated about as correct, despite being disproved. Another staunch human theory was also countered by the Zetas and proven incorrect. Prior to July 1995, in explaining the process of the pole shift and man's theories about polar reversals, the Zetas always described this as Planet X interacting with a sun that had a static magnetic alignment. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Pole Shift, written prior to July 15, 1995. When the giant comet positions itself exactly between the Earth and its Sun, things change. The Earth then has its greatest advocate for its previous alignment, the Sun, and its magnetic alignment, negated. The Earth hears only the magnetic voice of the giant comet, Planet X, so to speak, which stands between the Earth and its former magnetic commander, the Sun. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. This is documented also in the Zeta Talk on polar reversals, asserting a continuous magnetic alignment for the Earth. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Pole Reversals, written on July 15, 1995. Do the Earth's poles ever suffer a reversal during a pole shift? No. The Earth's polarity, where the magnetic North Pole points consistently in one direction, as though focused on a distant point in the universe, does not change ever. This is a hypothetical that humans have concocted to explain what they find in the Earth's crust. In this hypothesis, they are assuming that the Earth's crust does not move about, but it does. A human could only assume that the poles have moved, rather than the crust. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Sun, the Earth, and Mercury are pointing all in the same direction, that distant point off in the universe. NASA and human scientists have always asserted that the Sun's polarity switches about every 11 years, the Sun's poles flipping. They base this on the appearance of sunspots, solely. In the middle of the last solar cycle, however, they sent a probe, the Ulysses probe, which passed both the Sun's poles north and south and found them pointing north and south in the same direction as Earth and Mercury. Okay, we've got that established, what's north and what's south for the Sun. Based on their current theory about the Sun flipping about every 11 years and solar maximum being reached in the sunspot activity, they expected this reversal at the end of the year 2000 and announced that this had occurred. Well, then, their Ulysses probe went by again around August 31st, 2001, and reported that it had not changed, it had not flipped. And I quote from the JPL press release, dated September 9th, 2001. This will be Ulysses' second pass over the Sun's North Pole. It completed a circuit of the Sun in 1996. In 1995, Ulysses saw strong and simple magnetic fields at both poles of the Sun. As Ulysses passed by the South Pole of the Sun a few months ago, scientists expected to find that magnetic lines were pointing outward because observations from Earth show that the magnetic field had already reversed at the Sun's surface. Instead, they found that the magnetic lines were still pointing inward, just as they had been throughout solar minimum. End of the quote from JPL. Discombobulated by this evidence, NASA scientists tried to theorize that the Sun might have, on occasion, temporarily, two South Poles, a completely illogical argument. And despite this evidence, their own probe giving to them, NASA continues to assert that the Sun's poles flip every 11 years. But the evidence shows big time. Zeta's right again. On January 15, 1997, Zeta Talk stated that planetary or solar rotation did not occur because of centrifugal force, but due to attraction and repulsion of various components in the core. In other words, the Sun rotates because it is pulling toward various attractants in the universe around it, and because it rotates, it pulls all the planets along with it. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Centrifugal Force, written January 15, 1997. Motion is not a thing, immutable, unchangeable, eternal, once born at the start as during a big bang or whatever, never to go away. Motion is not a thing, it is a result, a reaction, and as such, it changes. Human astronomers explain orbits as a balance between a straight line motion, tangential to the Sun, and a gravity tug to the side, and assume that the forward motion is translated into a centrifugal force that never erodes, as it is a thing. This looks good on paper, but examine the reality a bit closer, and the contradictions and inadequacy of that argument emerge. There is erosion in the forward motion, which is not a thing, but a reaction. In order to keep the planet continuously revolving, there must be a push, and a push there is. It is caused by the swirling matter in the sun's core, which creates fields of influence such as magnetic fields that affect the orbiting planets to varying degrees, depending upon their composition. Why do you suppose that planets all orbit in the same direction? Is it by accident that this is the same pattern present in all solar systems? End of the quote from Zeta Talk. On March 31st, 2000, the Associated Press reported science findings supporting that Zeta statement made 3 years earlier. And I quote from the Associated Press article, March 31st, 2000, researchers find that layers of sun rotate at different speeds. Parallel layers of gas deep within the sun rotate at different speeds, an action that may explain the formation of sunspots and solar flares, new research shows. Using data collected from a sun-watching satellite and from six solar observatories on Earth, Stanford University scientists spotted two layers of gas deep within the sun that slow or speed up in an opposite but synchronized pattern. "It's not what we expected at all," Stanford research physicists said. "It comes totally out of the blue." The researchers said that the difference in rotation rate occurs above and below at a subsurface layer which separates two major gas areas of the sun, the convection zone near the surface and the radiative zone, which includes the core. Parts of the solar sphere spin at different rates. End of the quote from Associated Press. Does this sound like centrifugal forces running things, or part of the sun reaching toward things it is attracted to, creating rotation? Note the Zeta statement in January 97 was proven correct by Stanford University on March 2000, 3 years later. Hey, Zeta's right again. In addition to statements about the sun's rotation, the Zetas have made a similar statement about the Earth's rotation. On December 15, 1995, Zeta Talk stated that the rotation of the Earth and other planets with a liquid core were driven by that core. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Rotation," written on December 15, 1995. "Rotation is due to a mobility difference between the core of the planet and the surface, and for lack of a better analogy, we relate this to a dog chasing its tail. The core of the Earth is liquid and mobile, and has a mind of its own. As the Earth moves about in its orbit around the Sun, the relationship of the core of the Earth to surrounding influences changes. A child standing on a merry-go-round and wishing to face his mother must himself turn a complete circle in order to do this. In a like manner, the heavy core of the Earth moves to face or escape magnetically related forces in the universe about your solar system, dragging the surface with it. The core is not homogeneous everywhere, and thus parts of it are strongly attracted or repulsed to this part or that of the universe about it. So motion in the core is constant. No sooner does a part of the core move to the far side of its liquid tomb than it finds itself presented with its old problem again and sets into motion once again, round and round, like a dog chasing its tail." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. On July 18, 1996, the Lamont-Doherty Earth Observatory findings were published in news articles showing that the core of the Earth turns faster than the crust, thus driving the process. And I quote from Columbia University, Lamont-Doherty Earth Observatory, "Core spins faster than Earth, Lamont scientists find. The inner core rotates in the same direction as the Earth and slightly faster, completing its once-a-day rotation about two-thirds of a second faster than the entire Earth, Over the past 100 years, that extra speed has gained the core a quarter turn on the planet as a whole, the scientists found. Such motion is remarkably fast for geological movements, some 100,000 times faster than the drift of continents, they noted. The scientists made their finding by measuring changes in the speed of earthquake-generated seismic waves that pass through the inner core. End of the quote from Columbia University. Does the Columbia University data, available in July 96, validate the ZetaTalk statement made a half a year earlier, in December of 95? Yep, Zeta's right again. On June 1996, ZetaTalk stated that deflecting asteroids with nukes would be ineffectual. This met with vehement objection when debated on the PsyAstro Usenet boards. Ah, those crazy Zetas, etc. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Deflecting Asteroids, written on July 15, 1996. Does mankind now have the means to deflect such large, rapidly moving objects? Such a deflection would require a precisely placed explosive device of sufficient strength to vaporize the asteroid. Disintegration would be required because deflection is not possible in space. A nuclear explosion set off on the surface of an object in space would have minimal effect, as the explosion can expand in all directions at once. All parts of the explosion move rapidly out into space, and thus the asteroid is safely away before the nuke really gets going. And the asteroid proceeds on its way, having only momentarily stepped aside to avoid mankind's silly experiment. End of the quote from ZetaTalk Deflecting Asteroids. In June 1998, 2 years after the ZetaTalk went on record about deflecting asteroids, a computer model on nuking asteroids showed this to be the case. And I quote from Press Agency News, dated June 4, 1998. Nukes may not be enough to save Earth from asteroids. In the rubble pile model, the impact shockwave died out quickly, leaving a large crater in one spot without disturbance to the rest of the asteroid. At the opposite extreme, a solid rock asteroid may shatter into many smaller pieces when blasted. The pieces form a family of small asteroids or come together to form a rubble pile. End of the quote. 2 years before the computer model proves them right, the Zetas describe what would happen. Hey, Zeta's right again. On March 15, 1999, ZetaTalk stated that the increasing earthquake frequency and severity will be underreported in the media, a cover-up in place to dampen panic. And I quote from ZetaTalk, 1999 predictions. You're going to have increasing earthquake tremblers. There has been a tightening up of the plates against each other that has not even appeared in your media, though the information is available and has been documented on the Trouble Times website. This will be diffused by the media, which will fail to report them. Some earthquakes in remote places will not be reported at all, but nonetheless, word will get around. End of the quote. Underreporting was evident by 2002, as noted by people keeping their eye on the trend. And I quote from ZetaTalk Trouble Times pages. Get this. On March 26, 2002, ABC News reported that the March 3rd earthquake in Afghanistan registered a huge 7.9. But back on March 3rd, the USGS called it a 7.2, a major difference given the logarithmic Richter scale. They now call it a 7.4. And on March 26, 2002, the USGS listed that day's largest Afghan earthquake as a 6, which they've now upgraded to 6.1. Meanwhile, the BBC said that quake registered about 7. National Public Radio also reported that large swaths of trees were knocked to the ground, if news reports claim there are 5,000 people feared dead and no standing homes now in the vicinity, My limited knowledge of earthquake reporting says this is more consistent with a 7 than a 6. Also, the USGS has upgraded the March 5th earthquake in the Philippines now from a 7.2 to a 7.5. End of the quote from Trouble Times pages. By 2002, the trend of underreporting was evident as a dramatic increase had been occurring. And I quote again from Trouble Times. I took a snapshot from the National Seismic System comparing September and October in 2001 to the same period in 2002. In 2001, there were, during September and October, 7 quakes 7 plus, 22 quakes 6 plus, 227 quakes 5 plus. In 2002, there were, during that same September and October, 4 quakes 7 plus, 42 quakes 6 plus, and 244 quakes 5 plus, an increase in number and intensity. End of the quote. Was underreporting going on in the media? Yes, indeed. Was there an increase in quakes steadily? Yes, indeed. Hey, Zeta's right again. On March 15, 1999, Zeta Talk stated that domino quakes would begin, where tightly locked plates would bump one another. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Deep earthquakes have skyrocketed at an exponential rate since the mid-1980s, and this indicates a tightening up of these plates. Where this has not translated to surface quakes, it soon will, and you will find that because these deep plates are locked in, that a quake in one place transmits to another, and you will have what Nancy has been referring to as domino quakes. Rather than months going by before a repercussion is felt in another part of the world, repercussions will happen almost instantaneously." End of the quote from Zeta Talk. By June 2000, Reuters had noticed this, a full year later. And I quote from Reuters, June 9, 2000, "Quakes strike Asia, but are they linked? The earth moved in Asia as a powerful aftershock rocked the west coast of Indonesia's Sumatra Island, and a series of earthquakes jolted China, Myanmar, and Japan. Experts said the quake in Indonesia's province measured 7.9 on the Richter scale. The Indonesia earthquake, which appears to have occurred after a rupture between two key plates, the Pacific and Indian plates, may have triggered a chain reaction of seismic activity along the Circum-Pacific and Eurasia belts. China's State Seismology Bureau said the Sumatra, Myanmar, and China quakes all occurred along the Eurasian seismic belt stretching from the Mediterranean Sea through the Himalayas to Indonesia." End of the quote from Reuters. But if the Zetas had predicted this in April 1999, I, Nancy, had already noted domino quakes. They were evident following the August 17, 1999 Turkey 7.4 quake. But this was several months after the Zeta prediction, where the prior year's quakes appeared to be random. What I did was document a two-week period, the Turkey 7.4 quake on August 17th and the 2 weeks following, and a comparable two-week period the year before, in which there just happened to be a 7-point quake included. What I found was that in 1999, at the 7.4 Turkey quake, the plates were bumping each other in a west-to-east pattern, and I documented this on the Trouble Times website for those curious enough to want to see the documentation and the graph. The year before, the results were random. They would go east, west, north, south, here and there around the world, no pattern. So, domino quakes clicked in right after the Zetas predicted this. By the November 3, 2002 Alaska 7.9 quake, this pattern was evident. We find there's an almost instant reaction within the same day for deep quakes on one side of a plate to push a strong surface quake on the other side of the plate or the plate abutting that. A. Domino quakes predicted only by the Zetas. Zetas right again. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.